Let's see what happens here. Ooh, that is not good.
Oh my God.
Good Lord, I can't roll for shit.
Woo, 3.
I think that's good.
But remember, we're really good at making games harder than they need to be.
Hello, and welcome to House Rules, the podcast that explores all things rules related with your favorite tabletop games. Questions, clarifications, best, worst, and some that just need a tweak. So join us as we explore the House Rules.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of House Rules, a proud member of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast network. I am Commander Scott, and ignore that alert in the background. Today, joining me, we have everybody back together. I don't know exactly where this is going to air, but there's several where we didn't. We have Jeremiah and Houston with me today, along with the Jumpin' Jack Jamies of Jamie B and Jamie E. Everyone, how are we doing today?
Apparently I'm tired because I've been doing jumping jacks.
You say it like it's a bad thing.
Well.
Calisthenics are good for us old ladies.
Jumping jacks isn't the exercise I would choose first.
See, now I want to know what is first on your exercise list.
What is first on my exercise list?
Yeah.
Walking to the couch.
Friendly show, right?
and how can we house rule it?
Yes.
Recently, I have been enjoying stretching, and I have been working on planks.
Okay, no. We're talking exercises, not woodworking.
So we're going to house rule this planking. It's where you're going to be going pushing up and down, and it's going to be called a push up.
No, I can barely do the plank.
Anyway, so today we are going to be doing the second in our RPG 101 series, which is geared toward people who have heard about this elusive thing called role-playing games, and they may have heard of this thing called Dungeons & Dragons, but then they talk to nerds like us, and we start throwing out all kinds of stuff, of terminology and stuff, and we start spewing forth jargon that they may not be aware of. And this series is geared toward the people who are interested, but they don't know where to start, and we're just going to kind of familiarize them. If you missed it before, go back and listen to our first version, which is literally just an intro to all things RPG and a base overview. Today, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the subject, specifically with the different systems, the different rule systems that are out there. Because when we talk about role-playing games, and there are many, many out there, there have been many, there are many, and there will be many. In the future. But we have these kind of go-to phrases that we talk about, like 5E, skills-based, level-based, D20, you know, and all this good stuff. And some people may not be familiar with those. And so we're gonna take a look into those. So when we start using these, we're just going to go with the different systems that are out there. So it would have behooved me at the beginning of this to maybe done some kind of an outline so we could organize all this, but I didn't, so...
No. That's not our style.
It's not our style, exactly. So where should we start? Let's talk about this on the fly. Let's bring everybody that's listening on this journey with us. Where should we start when talking about the different types of role-playing game systems?
Go ahead, Jeremiah.
I was going to say, I think we need to start with a description of the dice, because a lot of things we're going to refer to talk about the primary die for that type of game, or dice for that game.
See, yep. And this is why I don't do this prep work, because I never would have thought of that, and that is a wonderful idea.
Yep.
So we talk about the different dice, and obviously with tabletop RPGs, you're going to roll these dice to help you determine a result, outcome, achieve an effect, something along those lines. And most of us grew up playing the old board games Monopoly and had our six-sided dice we rolled, or played Yahtzee or whatever else. And then you get to the weird-shaped dice where you have your four-sided die, the little pyramid that when you step on it at night, it hurts really bad. And then you have your six-sided dice, which everybody knows and loves. Then you get to the eight-sided die, which it's its own happy little die. And then you have the two 10-sided die, which can be rolled individually for a 1 through 10 result, or roll them together and read them as the 1s and 10s digits, so you have 1 to 100 as a result. Then you have the D12, which nobody really knows what it's for. And then the D20. And then you get some other ones like D100 and such, but those aren't common.
D30,
yeah.
Well, and that's the big thing. So your lovable six-sided dice from Yahtzee and all the stuff is a D6.
Yeah.
It is D for dice, and then the number of how many sides it happens to have.
Correct. But I think that gives us a good basis to start with. And then we can cite some of the different games and which dice they use as their primary dice.
Yeah. Not to mention the D1. You know, you always got to have a good D1 in there somewhere.
You're so weird.
No, what's weird is when he rolls it and gets different results.
It's that non-Euclidean geometry that gets in the way.
Now, I will say that there is times when D3 comes into play. It does. And you will be using a D6 for a D3. And you have either the choice, most of the time, it is 1 and 2 is 1.
3 and 4 is 2. 5 and 6 is 3. Or even an odds.
So there's an option there, but you got to know what you're doing. So D3 is not an actual dice.
It can be, though.
Yes, it is an actual dice.
Yes.
They make them.
Well, they make them. Yeah.
I had two upstairs.
I didn't know.
And
I have one that's marked with an R, a P, and an S for rock, paper, scissors.
Oh,
that is so much fun.
Is there a rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock?
No, I don't have a D5.
Damn. We need to make
there
that.
There is a D5.
As the show just goes to complete silence right there.
We're all talking
about D5. And we're done. Talking about the D5. Nobody talks about the D5.
No, that's the D12. We still don't know what it's for.
Battle axe damage.
You're really strong people.
Well, no, it's the roll that no dice the die that no one ever rolls. Very rarely.
Barbarians for hit points.
I want to make a game that is all D12s now.
We have that. It's called War Room.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't played that yet. I haven't even seen it set up. Everyone talks about this game. Other than a box, that's all I've seen.
Before too long, there's going to be two boxes you can look at and we won't play.
Exactly.
Okay, well, it's coming up. I want you to schedule a war game or war room day.
Okay.
And I'm going to try and work on my Dr. Strangelove cosplay for that day. Just FYI. Just so okay, I can
so,
just...
So back to the tabletop RPGs.
Okay, yes. Fine. If you want to stay on topic, geez. Anyway, so now that we've covered what the D nomenclature is, and everything, which is a good place to start. What I guess let's just go ahead and start with D20.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
probably the most common.
It's the most common. Thanks, Wizards of the Coast. But
back to our Indies early 2000s flashbacks. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Our PTSD. But yeah, so D20 system. If somebody says, hey, I played this role playing game, blah blah blah. Yeah, it's D20. What do they mean?
They mean that the bulk of the game's rules will be required to roll a D20 in order to play the game.
It'll be the most common die you roll for the game.
It'll be the primary die. It'll be the base die for all the majority of your interactions in the game.
Yeah. and I mean, so there for a long time in the late 90s, early 2000s, Wizards of the Coast, of course, procured TSR, the company and acquired the rights to mainly Dungeons and Dragons, a lot of other things, but Dungeons and Dragons is what they wanted. And they retooled Dungeons and Dragons into third edition. And with that, they released the D20 system, which like, everybody has said, the primary mechanic for that is the primary, conflict resolution is rolling a 20-sided die. And now this had ups and downs and everything, and I enjoyed playing the third edition. 3.5 came out a few years later, where they revised some editions and such. But I generally dislike the era of D20 because Wizards of the Coast released it under the Open Gaming license, and for almost 10 years, you could not throw a rock without hitting a D20 system. Everybody went to D20. It did solely. It is responsible for creating the most tabletop RPG stagnation in the genre's history.
It was a glut of different IPs reskinned with the D20 mechanic.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah,
and IP
means intellectual property.
Thank you.
Yes, it does. And I thought we were going to save that as like its own separate topic.
And we will. We will. We're not going to go in depth on that. Right.
Okay.
Now. But yeah. Right. Yeah. No, right. You're right. That is its own separate topic, because we can riff for hours on the whole D20 thing. But if somebody says to you, oh, it's D20, that's what they mean. It's that system that was released under the Open Gaming License by Wizards of the Coast way back when. It may have some variations, but that's it. Now I'm gonna parry off of this, or could take a little bit of a veer off of this a little bit, and we're gonna go to something that was actually discussed a little bit prior to us recording this, and that is the 2D20 system. And since we're on D20, they should not be confused, because the 2D20 system is a new role playing system that has been released by Modiphius Games here in the last few years. They had originally launched it with a couple of original titles. I'm not sure what they're called because I didn't get into them, but they weren't licensed intellectual properties, as Jamie E. was so helpful to clarify on us, somebody who might not know what IP meant. But the first IP, licensed IP that they did for Modiphius, I guess, was Conan, because I'm not sure the release dates. But then they quickly followed with Star Trek. There was another one. No, I'm sorry, Star Trek. They've recently changed over their Achtung Cthulhu, which is Cthulhu World War II, to the 2D20 system. And they've just recently released Fallout, the video game RPG from Bethesda, as a 2D20 tabletop pen and paper RPG. So,
I don't have too much to add on this particular topic, since I'm not familiar with the. Prior to our recording, I had no idea that there was a 2D20 system. So don't have a whole lot to add to this.
Well, that tells me how much attention you paid to the one session zero we did for Star Trek 89 years ago.
I'm still a fan of the Last Unicorn Games version of Star Trek, but that's my personal preference.
Last Unicorn Games was good. So with the 2D20 system, the base gist of it is you have attributes and skills. Okay, so it is primarily a skills-based game, and we'll get into what I mean by that here in just a minute. But the game master, when he sets a difficulty for something, it's basically, I forget what the examples are, but it's like 1 through 5, okay, for the difficulty. And he'll have you do a roll, which is attribute plus skill, okay? And that becomes your target number to roll that or less on D20s, and you need a number of successes. So if you roll that or less, it's a success, and you need a number of successes equal to or exceeding the target number. And you'll always roll base 2 20-sided dice. That's what you roll. And you can use different action points and stuff to purchase more dice if you want to. Or you can do some other things. There's also some criticals. But the beauty, and I like this system, even though we haven't got a chance to play it much, I think the beauty of this system comes twofold. One is if you generate successes in addition to what you need to pass the roll. So let's say the difficulty of whatever I'm rolling is 2, but because of bonuses and extra dice, I get, let's say, 4 successes. Because you can also get, you also have critical ranges, which will give you 2 successes and such. So let's say I get 4 successes. I can actually bank those extra successes as momentum, okay? Which can then be used. It's almost like karma in the Marvel Superheroes percentile game. And it can be used by other players to either add dice to theirs or to increase a critical range or other effects or to activate other effects. But that momentum that we bank is only for like the scene. It's not for the entire session. So once the scene is done and the conflict, the immediate conflict is done, that banking goes away. So it gives you, it changes the value of what you have banked so that you're not trying to hoard it for the entire session and you can use it a little more. So that's one of the beauties of it. The other one is, and I haven't finished because I just got the Fallout rule book. I haven't finished reading through a lot of it yet. But in Star Trek, so you've got your primary character that you play. And, you know, with Star Trek, like one person may be playing, let's say, the chief science officer. Another person is playing the chief engineer. Well, very rarely are they going to come. They're going to be in the same scene together. So if you're playing through a scene that is in engineering during a conflict or whatever, and the character who's the player who's playing the main engineer, of course, is doing his thing. Well, the other players may not have anything to do because their characters aren't present for that scene. They have these things called secondary characters. So literally, you can roll up. It's not a full character. It's like a character light that you can roll up just quickly, just on the fly, and create it just for that scene. And you can either, like, if you don't like him, okay, cool, he's just for that scene, and we're done. Or hey, I really like the way this character is going. I can keep him in the story and go back to him for future scenes and just keep his subplot going. So those two aspects, exactly. Barkley would be a good thing, a good example of a secondary character who was probably, you know, came up with by a main bridge officer player, and they just liked him and kept him going. But those two aspects, I think, are the things that I really love about the 2D20 system.
Okay, so definitions of things that you just said. A session is the time that you sit down to play your game. So generally, a session is going to be probably a couple of hours, depending on how much content your game master has put together for you to play. Sometimes it can be longer.
How much time you have available to play.
And how much time you have available to play. But that's a session. It's from the beginning of starting to play to the end of play. A scene, as he said, is is a fight sequence. It is...
Not necessarily a fight.
Not necessarily a fight. But it's action. You're rolling dice. Decisions are being made. And it's probably only, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe. Depends. I mean, it's...
Think of like a movie or a TV show.
Yep.
You have a scene where something occurs. You're in the police precinct resolving something, or you're at a crime scene, or you're fighting it out with a bad guy in a warehouse. I mean...
Right. And as we talk about all these things, we're going to jump from thing to thing. But there's just so many games. We mentioned that in 101. If you like a movie, if you like... any intellectual property that's out there, basically.
There's a tabletop RPG for it.
There is a tabletop RPG for it. And it's just figuring out what that system is. But I'm sorry. There you go. That was just some terminology.
No, don't apologize. This is exactly what we're here for. And I thank you for keeping us, you know, in the spirit of what this show is supposed to be. Anyway, so that's 2D20. Not to be confused with D20. So, next.
Well, I mean, I think we should maybe take a step back.
All right.
And I honestly don't remember if we broached this subject in the first recorded session we did. So maybe we are talking about it and you can just say, hey, we already talked about that. But the core of all these game systems, whether it's a 2D20, whether it's a D20, whether it's a D6, whatever that system is, a lot of them are generally built around one premise or a similar premise, right? Where you have some sort of difficulty modifier that's been created, whether it's defined or determined by the GM or whatever, and you're using that primary dice, whether it's a 3D6 system, the D20 system, the 2D20 system, to achieve over or under that result or at that result, right? So that's kind of like the core of what most of these RPG mechanics are going to revolve around.
Yes. And your characters, I mean, some of them are very complex.
Can be.
And they can be. And it's a lot of information to try to swallow and figure out, and points go here and points go there and lots of dice rolling to create. But then some characters are a lot simpler, mm-hmm. a lot easier.
Well, you can make a Fate character in 10 minutes
yeah.
with a group. Meanwhile, you can make a Rifts character for Palladium in about 3 hours.
Now, the Game Master's Guide shortened that quite a bit.
Significantly. It takes down to about an hour and a half.
Exactly. That's almost 50%.
And I like that system. Or like that. I like that setting. I don't care much for the rules, but that's another session.
That's another discussion, yeah.
I would like to add at this point, one of the things that Houston just mentioned was that when you're rolling your said dice, like he said, sometimes you're trying to roll, you want to roll high.
Correct.
And sometimes you want to roll low. I would like to tell you now that that means you need two sets of dice. Because if you sit and tell your dice, roll high, roll high, roll high, and then ask it to roll low, they don't like you anymore.
And then
they won't know what to do, and they'll roll all willy-nilly, and your life will be hard. So just know that if you're going to play games,
you need multiple sets of math rocks.
Yes, you do. Ones that roll high, ones that roll low, ones that roll willy-nilly, because that adds a lot of excitement into a game sometimes.
Mm-hmm. See, now, okay, this brings up two things in my head. First, I want to create a role-playing game that is the willy-nilly system.
Yay!
Those are wild surges in D&D.
It's literally up to the game master, depending on what you have to roll and what your target is. All right, this time you're rolling high. Which dice are you using?
Ooh, you have to roll the D12, and yes. Odds is one thing and evens the other, or something. There can be a chart. A chart.
Reference charts. We love reference charts.
Your goal. Your goal is to roll a 13 on that D12.
Well, so the willy-nilly system needs to happen. The second thing is something that Houston mentioned. I think you just mentioned it somewhat in passing, but it intrigued me. Is there a system? So most systems that I'm aware of, you either have to roll high above a target number, or you're wanting to roll low below a target number. Is there any system out there that gives you a bonus for rolling exactly a target number? Like above or below, like one is failure, one is success less?
No, most of them sit on the extremes, right?
Yeah.
So whether it's the D20 system, it's going to be the 20 or the 1. If it's the 3D6 system with the wild die, it's the 1 or the 6.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's nothing that I know of off the top of my head that's precisely roll the defined number you're looking for.
Yeah. Like, that would be interesting if you had an RPG that, like, okay, you have to roll this number or higher, let's say, to succeed. You know, and most of them, like you said, are the extremes. So, like, if you're looking at the D20 system, usually if you roll higher than your target number, you... on a D20, you succeed. If you roll a 20, you get a critical success. So it would be intriguing if there was a game that said you have to roll your target number or higher to succeed, but if you roll your target number exactly, that's when you get your critical success.
No, but there's nothing I know of like that, but like Pathfinder 2nd Edition, haven't played it, but I do know that critical successes and failures happen basically on threshold. Like if you need to roll like say a 12 to hit, and let's say you get like an 18 or 20, if you're just so many points higher than your target number, it will result in a critical success or a critical failure. So it has more of a range for its crit system. But I don't know of anything that specifically roll that number specifically.
Before we get too much further, can someone explain the 3D6 system to me?
Sounds like a perfect segue to me. Thank you, Jamie.
Well, I think that should be probably Scott's go, since it is his. He has probably the most recent experience with it.
See, you say the 3D6 system, and you bring me up, which leads me to think you're talking about the West End Game Star Wars system.
That would be an interesting segue. I think that's correct.
However, I've never called it the 3D6 system. I've just called it the D6 system.
And most people call it the D6 system.
Yeah. Because you can have stuff that's less than 3D6, but 3D6 is your average, right?
Yes.
It should be for a human normal standard or whatever.
So this is one of my favorite RPG systems that's out there, because I like skills based versus level based generally.
And we'll have to define that in a minute.
Well, I was going to say this would be a perfect time for somebody to jump in and say, now what he means there is.
Oh well, what he means there is. So so. To harken back to D&D, since we've used that as our introductory to this particular podcast, D&D is a level based system. What that primarily equates to is you have a character. Your character will progress in level, so it will level up. You'll gain XP. You'll go from level 1 to level 2, level 3, et cetera, et cetera.
XP. In this instance, means experience points.
That's correct. Experience points you achieve in the game. So as your character levels up, they will get progressively better at certain attributes, whether it's their attack, whether it's their hit points being the number of the magical number that once you get below it, you're dead. So, but you'll go up at hit points. You go up in your stats, depending on 5th edition, if you hit level 4, 8, 12, et cetera, every 4 levels, essentially, for most characters. Some characters are a little different. But as you progress, you get better and better and better in both your skills that you're trained in with 5th edition and also your ability to attack and survive attacks. That would be a level-based system. Skill-based system, which Scott has alluded to here, the D6 West End Games is one. The Cyberpunk system is another one that comes to mind that is a skills-based system. Those are systems where your character doesn't necessarily get better in – primarily they don't get better in their abilities or like levels, and I'll use that in air quotes, but they improve in their skills, right? So if they're good at shooting a gun and they – progress and they work at shooting a gun, they can improve that ability, right? So as they improve that ability, they'll be able to add more dice in the D6 system. Instead of rolling 3D6, they may be 3D6 plus 2 or 3D6 or 4D6, etc., etc. They'll be able to roll more dice to give them a greater chance of success. That's skills systems in a nutshell. It's focused more on the skills specifically that you're using versus the character as a whole, which you're going to be leveling.
Well, and personally, I prefer skills-based systems to level-based systems or class-based systems, because in my opinion, like if somebody's playing D&D, they don't think about their character as a character. They think about their character as what level they are. Like, oh, I can't wait to get to I'll be a level 10 wizard because then I get this spell unlocked or whatever. Because if you take Dungeons and Dragons, I don't think it really matters which version, but like a level 10 wizard is a level 10 wizard, regardless. Now, there are ways you can customize the characters a little bit, depending on what system you're playing with, prestige classes, or with specialties, or with subclasses, or something like that. But if you don't have any of that, like if you take a standard level 10 wizard in D&D 5e, and you make five of them, they're all going to be the same character, pretty much. But when it comes to a skills based system, you have to think more about how you want to play the character when you advance it. So with Star Wars and with 3D6, and most recently we've been playing the revised and expanded second edition, which was I think, and Jeremiah knows more about this than I do, it was created by the fandom. Right?
Correct. There was a group on Google Plus that got together and decided they wanted to create the ultimate version of the game that improved upon some of the problems in the original, revised, and expanded to create the re-up, which was what it's called. And they made it available to everybody for download free of charge. It's all fan-created. And it fixed a lot of problems and smoothed some of the issues over, and then it actually went backwards and kept some of the original game mechanics versus some of the other revised and expanded versions.
Yeah, I've been reading through the revised and expanded updated. Wow, I just totally hit my mic. Rulebook and stuff, and I do like what they've done. They've done a really, really good job with that system. But like you, so in this system, all of your attributes are, like Houston had said earlier, D6s. So, like, if I have a skill, so there are, what is it, six core attributes?
Correct.
And
not including four skills.
Not including four skills. But that's Star Wars specific, so we're not going to get into that. We're just going to look at D6 as a system, because there's at least one other system that uses, one of the game that uses this, they don't have force powers. But, so there's six base attributes. You know, like strength, dex, mechanical, technical, things of that nature, knowledge. And they will have a base value of however many D. You know, 4D, 3D, 5D, whatever. And as Jamie E. pointed out earlier in the show, D in this context equals dice. And in this one, it's D6s. That's all you'll use. It's six sets of dice. And so if you have, you know, an attribute at 4D, when you have to roll using that attribute, you will roll four six-sided dice, and you have to meet or beat a difficulty number set by the DM. And one of those dice will either be a different color, or it'll be rolled separately, some way to designate it from the others, and that will be your wild die. And it acts as a normal die, adding to the total just like anything else, unless it rolls either a 1 or a 6. Now, if it rolls a 6, because in this game higher is better, if it rolls a 6, you will add the result to it, and you will roll it again. And you will continue adding and re-rolling the results as long as they roll 6s. A roll of a 1, on the other hand, was a mishap, meaning something bad happened. Now, in the first and second edition of the game, it basically just meant there was a complication. The game master came up with something. That was it. But in the revised and expanded, it can actually mean a number of different things. They give the game master more options to use with the one on, excuse me, a one on a wild die, and I like it. The game master could either have it be just a mishap and still succeed or whatever. Or the game master can choose to ignore the result of the one. So basically, if let's say you rolled 4d6 and you rolled a 3, 4, and 5 and got a result of, what is that, 3, 4, 7, 5 is 12. So a 12. And then you rolled a 1 on your wild die on your fourth one. So you don't add the 1, but you also take away one of the other dice, either the lowest or the highest, depending on how the game master wants to apply it. So you don't have to come up with a complication every time, but yeah, so, and I love that, but at its gist, that is what the 3D6 system is, or the D6 system, depending on what people will call it. is whatever your attributes are, you're rolling that number of D6s, and you're trying to meet or beat a difficulty score. So, yeah.
Yes.
So, one of the skill-based systems that I like, that we've been recently playing, is a D100 system, and that's RuneQuest. And
now, you know, I don't know if we want to talk about RuneQuest, because I don't think we're going to find anybody. I don't think we have anybody on the show that knows anything about the RuneQuest system.
No one at all.
No one. I'm just saying we're not very versed in that. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But like Jamie was saying, the RuneQuest and most of the Chaosium based games are a skill based system. And they use a percentile base for their skills.
Now, when we say percentile, because Jamie just said D100, and now you said percentile. Let's clarify these.
Correct. So you would typically take two 10-sided dice, like I mentioned earlier, roll them together, and read them as ones and tens. So you can have anywhere from a 0-1 to a 0-0 on two 10-sided dice, which represents 100. So you can roll one from 1 to 100 as a percentile. And your skills in these games will have a percentage base. Like you might have a sword skill, a short sword, at 52% or 55%. And if you roll the percentile dice, two 10-sided dice, and you roll less than that skill number, then you would hit. If you roll more than, you miss. But it also plays into more of your skills.
And one of the things that I like about this, like compared to D&D, we just talked about D&D and having skills in D&D. Through your process of making your character, you're given points and you put points into these different skills. And you don't necessarily get all of them. But your class, whatever class you choose to play, you know, whether you're a wizard, a rogue, or whatever, certain skills are unlocked for you.
In D&D,
right. But you don't, like, no matter how much you use a skill throughout your play, you don't gain anything.
Until you level up, until
you have acquired enough XP or experience points given by your game master. And then it's just based on whatever the rule book says for the character that you've created, you'll get so many skill points. And it is based on one of your modifiers times a modifier. But on the D100, the RuneQuest, the using the dice, that's one thing I like. There's this large list of skills, which can be a little bit daunting, but the process for making it is so nice. But when you use a skill, you mark it.
Put a little tick mark next to it.
Yes.
If you're successful with skill during a session.
If you're successful, you get to put a little tick mark. And at the end of every session, you get to roll.
To try to improve that skill.
To try to improve that skill. And it's relatively easy to roll in the beginning because your skill's so low.
Well, you're trying to do the reverse of what you did in the game to be successful. You roll less than your percentage to succeed in the game. But to improve that skill, you have to roll higher than your value afterwards. So let's say you have singing at 20%. It's pretty easy to roll higher than 20%. So you'll improve pretty quickly. But then as you begin to master that skill and get up to 70, 80, 90%, it gets much more difficult to advance in it.
And this is why you need two different types of dice. One that rolls high, one that rolls low, and know which one's which.
But that's the premise for the and like I said, Call of Cthulhu for Chaosium and RuneQuest, and they have several mechanics in game system Pendragon. They all work similar with some tweaks to them.
Yeah, I've just started into my Chaosium Call of Cthulhu education, and I'm really enjoying what I'm reading through the rules for this. One thing I like with the Call of Cthulhu, and I haven't done a lot of reading into RuneQuest or any of the others yet, but is that they have an entire rule set for chases.
Yes, they do.
And I don't know if that holds true to the other RPGs that use this system.
Not so much in RuneQuest. That's not something you encounter often. There's some rules for chariots, but that's different.
Yeah. And I like that. It's interesting how to use chases. I've read through that chapter twice now, and I plan to read through it a couple more because I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
Well, and I know, like, I'm pretty sure our plan is moving forward with this RPG 101 is to take deep dives into some of these systems to really get in to how some of these systems works and the more ins and outs and, you know, making characters and everything like that. But I just forgot what I was going to say. I was going somewhere with that.
So a good 2D6 system that I like is Traveler. It's been around since the early 70s or the 70s as well. But it's similar to Scott's 3D6 system, but you roll 2D6 for conflict resolution. And you're trying to beat a difficulty with your 2D6. And, of course, there's been 5 different editions of the game. And one of those was a D20 version, and one was a GURPS version.
And what is GURPS?
Oh, GURPS.
Universal Role-Playing System. But we'll get into GURPS. It's its own beast at a later date.
Yeah, GURPS is a thing. And we may have to have an entire episode just on GURPS.
It is a lot to GURPS.
There is a lot to GURPS.
Have the GURPS.
Well, and the fact that GURPS, and we're just going to, I know you touched on it there for a second, but we're just going to say it. So GURPS, Generic Universal Role-Playing System, was literally the working title for that project when it was being developed. And it just never got changed.
And now there's 4,062 books published for it.
Yep. All under the working title of GURPS.
Correct. So the current edition of Traveler, the 5th edition version, one of its claims to fame is that during character generation, when you're creating your character, you have to roll to see if you survive. Because there's a fair possibility your character will die during character generation. Generation is a mini game.
That was the part. That's where I was going with that. Yeah. Thank you. Not with that, because you went somewhere. You went with Traveler. But that was what I was going to say. We will take a deep dive into some of the games. But what I was going to say was that a lot of these games are built or can be built for you to be the conquering hero, you know, and... You know, one of the things that we could probably talk about is one-off sessions versus long-haul
campaigns. Or miniseries.
Right.
One-shots.
But, you know, a lot of these games, you know, that is the point. You know, you are the conquering hero, you know, in D&D, I think especially, you know, your characters.
You're the protagonist of the story.
Right, and you're really trying to build the best possible character. Now, you do a lot better, Jeremiah. You know, he loves it when he's got a pot-bellied character who puts
My favorite second edition D&D character was my fighter, who put all of his proficiency slots into cooking and was pot-bellied with a 13 strength and 12 constitution. He was amazing. He retired 8th level, but he was a hell of a chef.
But also where I was going with that is, like, you take a system like RuneQuest, and I know there's others, they are not go out and conquer the world. They are think about what you're going to do because your character may very well die if you get too willy-nilly.
A little too uppity.
And I think that's one of the things that's nice about role-playing systems. It can be more serious if you like that, more nitty-gritty, more almost real world to the whatever fantasy world it's in. Or it could just be
paranoia where the parties are trying to kill each other because they're all in league with the computer and they're all traitors.
Yeah, or it can be that.
Yeah. I've never had a paranoia party survive the first adventure.
So, and that's the thing. So, there was a role-playing game, we're going to mention this, called Paranoia, which is basically, what's the new version of that? There's a new version that's out that everybody loves.
I have not played the new one, I didn't get the Kickstarter, and I've not bought it.
No, it's out, not Paranoia. No, there's a computer game out there that everybody loves, where everybody's trying
Among Us.
What is it?
Among Us.
Among Us, yes. Among Us, which is this hugely popular thing. You know what, guys? It is a role-playing game from, what, the 1980s? Paranoia. Okay, it's Paranoia. Yeah, it's a role-playing game from the 1980s. You were playing a digitized version of something your parents, and possibly grandparents, I'm not sure, played. You're welcome. Thank
you. But that's a 2D6. And I guess we can get Scott talking about some of the games that have specialty dice.
Well, I was going to ask, what about World of Darkness?
Ooh, that's right.
Yeah, so those are a couple of things that I was looking at on my shelf here. And yeah, so World of Darkness and the specialty dice things do need to be mentioned. So let's go ahead and let's dive into World of Darkness here real quick, because I know that's popular, and I'm sure at some point in their RPG discussions, somebody who's wanting to break into the world is going to hear the term or the name Vampire the Masquerade. So take it away, whoever.
we're all waiting for Jamie B to talk, because I know she's the vampire lorist.
I haven't played it since I played Mage with you guys. I don't know what system it's actually called.
It's a D10.
Okay. So similar to Marvel?
No, because it's single D10.
Marvel would be 100.
Yeah, okay. You're rolling D10s for successes, but you're rolling them based on each die, basically.
That's right.
Yes. So you may roll multiple D10s, but you're not adding them per se. You're trying to see how many successes you get by based on your rolls.
It's kind of like the 2D20 system, but with D10s.
Yeah.
Because it has been a while since we've played any World of Darkness game. I don't remember. Do you add your skills to your roll?
Yes, but you'll add your pips, because if you remember, your characters don't have many pips. The little circles on your character sheet, little dots you fill in.
Yeah,
I was getting ready to tell you. You need to tell people what.
So pips your typical character sheet, your attributes and your abilities and skills will be like a 1 through 6. That's how many pips you can have per. So you don't have a lot of variability in there, but those pips mean a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you have an attribute at a certain pip and you have a skill at 6 is a phenomenal skill to have. But yes, you'll add that to your role trying to beat a difficulty.
Mm.
But that's the premise behind the World of Darkness games, which have been rebranded. You started with a vampire, you had werewolf,
mage,
and then you had a couple different versions of each. Then you had some of the other ones, the Sin Eaters, you had the Hunters, and...
But it's also one of the ones that has a simpler sheet.
Correct.
And it is not difficult to create your character.
It is not. Well, once you start getting into the special abilities and spells and that kind of stuff, it gets a little complicated because they like to use Latin terms.
Well, who knows Latin?
Exactly.
But
it's also really heavy on the RP part.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, as opposed to something like Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, I was going to say, World of Darkness leans a lot more toward the storytelling aspect than it does the dice rolling. The dice rolling is almost secondary to the storytelling part of that one.
And here's where someone could chime in and say any RPG could be used in a heavy RP content.
Correct, because you use the rules that help the game, in my opinion. They're all guidelines to help you get... Like we said before, they're all guidelines to help you tell a story.
Yes.
And you can go as crunchy the rules you want or as light as you want them.
Yeah, but with World of Darkness, I think it's written to be RP heavy. And the others are written to be a decent balance between the RP and the game, the role-playing and the game aspect. It's balanced, and it's up to the game master and the players as to how they wish to weight that back and forth. But World of Darkness is written with the role-playing, you know, heavy. And the rules are very light. It would be... You would have to make up stuff to make... you'd have to add a lot of house rules to make World of Darkness be mechanic heavy, I think, because they're just not there.
And it's also one that's very heavy in the, here's your next term, LARPing community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it lends to that storytelling.
Yes.
LARPing is live action role playing.
It's where you dress up and run around and play your characters and in real life run around and pretend to be the characters. And
they have a book on Kickstarter right now for that very thing. It's intended for your LARPing sessions, not your sit around the table and play sessions.
And unfortunately, I don't think any of us here have a lot of experience with LARPing.
Mine's mostly what I've read, and I've seen a couple people play, but beyond that, no.
But I'd kind of like to bring somebody on at some point who does a lot of LARPing and can talk to that situation.
I might have somebody.
That would be fun. So we'll look at that for a future down the road. But yeah. So the other thing that got brought up was specialty dice systems. And the big one that comes to mind with that, there's at least two in my head. One, of course, is the Fantasy Flight Star Wars, the current Fantasy Flight Star Wars system. And I don't know what you would call these systems, but...
Genesis,
yeah. That's their basic stripped-down, no IP behind it.
Okay, yeah. See, but is that just the Fantasy Flight one?
Yes.
Now, the reason I say that is because one of the other ones that comes to my mind is the Warhammer 40K role-playing games, because they use specialty dice, don't they?
I'm not as familiar with those.
Yeah, I'm not either. I've not played a lot of those. We'll have to explore that in a future term. But yeah, like Fantasy Flight loves their specialty dice. And by specialty dice, we mean that the dice that you play the game with don't have, usually they don't have numbers. They're still D6s, D8s, D12s, D10s, D20s, but they have symbols that give you the results of whatever, and it's simultaneously good and bad. It's good in that it gives you something that's refreshing, but it's bad in the fact that you've got to really kind of hunker down and memorize what these systems are.
What do we keep calling them? The Wookiee pimples?
Wookiee pimples. Yes. Yes, you're rolling a number of successes, and the success looks like a little explosion or a kapow, or as we call them, Wookiee pimples.
Yes, and then don't forget about fate.
I was gonna go into that next. So okay. Trending into that when you start talking about specialty dice, you got to look at the fate and the fudge system, which uses fudge dice. Which are D6s, but instead of numbers 1 through 6 on the 6-sided dice, you have two sides that are blank, two sides that are pluses, and two sides that are minuses. And I haven't done a lot with the fate system, but somebody else here has. So
the fate system is like we were talking about earlier. It's a narrative or storytelling system primarily. The character generation is meant to be a cooperative session where everybody makes their characters together because their characters are all tied to each other in some shape, form, or fashion. And it has a lot of different settings that you can play in. They keep it fairly generic, and Evil Hat, I think that's who makes it. Evil Hat makes their PDF free to anybody. So you can, the basic game, you can go down to the PDF right now. And they've got one of their brick and mortar deals where if you buy a hard copy of one of their game books, and you can show proof of purchase or receipt at the website, they will send you the PDF for that book for free.
Oh, that's nice.
That way you can have the digital plus the hard copy. But it's a storytelling system, so it uses six-sided dice with the pluses and minuses, like you were saying, and it works on a bell curve. And once again, the characters don't have really much like World of Darkness. You have certain numbers for your attributes and skills, but they're rarely ever higher than a +3 or +4. They can be, but that's rare. So those numbers have a big effect on that bell curve with those dice. And you basically use them to tell the scene, resolve a conflict. And it catches a lot of flack because it's very light on the rules and mechanics, but very heavy on the narrative. And that gets into the whole discussion of a narrative-based game versus a mechanic-based game, and how much the players can influence the story versus the game master telling the story. That's an age-old argument amongst tabletop RPG players.
Hmm. Where do the Monte Cook games fall in here?
They're kind of like well, the Cypher system in particular, which I really enjoy, they kind of fall in the middle. They're rules lighter, but they're not so light as Fate. But they give a little more order and structure than Fate. So they're not as rules heavy as say a D&D or something like that.
Hey, if I'm wrong, Houston, but don't they primarily lean on D10s?
No, that's a D20 system.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah. So basically, it actually operates on the rule of three. So the nice thing about the Cypher system is that the DM or GM, whichever term you prefer, DM would be go ahead.
DM is Dungeon Master, typically, which is more with D&D than anything else because you're always, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. So most people go with GM for Game Master. I'm so sorry. Referee. I've never heard that one. Yep. Sorry. Sorry, Houston. Go back.
Or Keeper.
Yep, there you go.
If you're doing the Call of Cthulhu things.
Well, so real quick, I'm sorry, I'm going to jump in here. So this is something that irks the hell out of me with role-playing games. And that is the cutesy little names that they come up with for the roles to fit your genre. Like the new Stargate role-playing game that I kickstarted. It's not a Game Master. It's a Gate Master. See, Stargate, Gate Master. You know,
we'll call it Gate Master from now on, right?
God, I don't care about that.
Can't we call it the Gatekeeper?
Well, or the Keymaster.
Well, they did.
We definitely need a Keymaster.
But, well, that's just it. With the Ghostbusters role-playing game from West End Games way back, which was the precursor to the 3D6 system, it's called a Ghost Master. You know, I hate the cutesy little names. They're annoying as shit. Just call it a Game Master.
So when we start playing Call of Cthulhu, I'm calling you the Gatekeeper.
I'm calling you Keeper.
But in Marvel, you're a judge.
Yeah, exactly. And in Marvel, you're a judge. You know what? I don't care. You're a damn Game Master. Don't give me the cutesy little names for to fit your genre. You know, I don't care.
Scott is never going to be able to referee a game for us ever again.
Scott,
Now you're calling him a referee.
Scott has never refereed a game, and he will never referee a game. He will game master his games. Thank you very much.
That's a 15-yard penalty, young man.
Houston apparently does not want his Call of Cthulhu character to survive even to get to the first game.
You know what? That's Keeper Scott's decision.
Touche.
So this is where I introduce the Martian, and the conversation goes completely off the rails.
No. Back to where we were.
Back to Monty Cook and the Cypher system. So the nice thing about it is the GM in this case doesn't do any of the rolling at all for the game. So if you are attacking a monster, you're rolling a D20 to make the attack. If the monster is attacking you, as the GM, you might describe what's going on to the player character. The player character would be the player. And the character would be the character that the player is playing, but you would describe what is happening to that particular player character, and the player character will be making a roll to defend against that attack. So it's completely in the dice is completely in the hold of the player. It's the player's responsibility for both on attack or defense or anything in between, skills, challenges, things of that nature. But the system itself, like I said, it's simple and kind of elegant, actually. It's based on the rule of three. So, you know, if I say this task is a level one task, that means on a D20, you have to roll three or higher. If I think this is a level two task for you, it's going to be obviously a six or higher. Now, obviously, anybody who can do math really quickly can understand that, you know, if I say it's a level 8 task or a level 7 task, that gets beyond the D20. That's where things like edge, or not edge, that's where effort and spending points from your die pool come into effect. But it's a really simple system. I mean, it's three. You only have three stats: might, speed, and intellect. Your characters are basically a noun, a verb, and an adjective, a noun, and a verb. That's the descriptor for your character. Those descriptors can add bonuses or hindrances to your character. So it's a really, really fun system. I really want to do a Mass Effect IP, not streamed, obviously, not for money, but around the horn, I want to do something like a Mass Effect IP cipher system game, because I think it would be really fun.
So next week for that?
The 600 D6 system. He knows exactly what I'm talking about.
You want to play some Dragon Ball Z?
Absolutely.
How many dice can you roll?
How many can you find and re-roll and re-roll and re-roll?
Oh, exactly. My God. I still love the time, Jeremiah, when you and I were playing Dragon Ball Z. And a friend of ours was game mastering the game. And we were after the Dragon Balls, because that's kind of what you do in Dragon Ball. And it was in the possession of, I can't remember the character's name, but he has that flying ship, you know? And my character was a little bit morally ambiguous. And so I'm like, hang on, how... I can generate, like, I forget what it was, like 150 D of damage with my primary attack, right? And he's like, yeah, that's enough to completely disintegrate that ship and everybody on board, right? Yeah. And it's in the air, which means I wouldn't hit the planet. So I could just
you have to worry about destroying the planet with your abilities, but
yes,
go ahead.
Yes. But I wouldn't hit the planet because it was in the air, which means whatever, as it carried on through, it would just leave the planetary atmosphere because the planet would drop off below it. I'm like, I'm just going to disintegrate the entire ship and everybody on board. The Dragon Ball should just literally fall to the ground because it can't be destroyed. And the Game Master's like, crap.
It's one way to solve the problem.
How do I stop this? Yeah, that was a fun time. So, anyway.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is what it means to role play.
Yep, pretty much. How can I break this game in a fun manner? You know, you don't want to be one of those guys that tries to break it just to try to break it. You know, you want to have at least a little bit of reason behind it.
I don't know. I kind of enjoy breaking Savage Worlds.
Oh, good God, with your plunging fire.
Plunging fire. But we won't get into that. We'll save that for a whole separate session.
Who was the Savage Master of that game?
I gotta get the book down and see what the term for him is.
I would like to thank all of our listeners for being here on Houston's last episode.
Wait, is that all it took?
Oh, so wrong. So wrong. So...
Actually, is a good point. We have actually talked about this before on other episodes. Jeremiah was being very creative with his play, but it was a newer game master.
A seasoned game master would never let me get away with it.
Right. Yeah. But I think that's one thing to think about. I mean, you know, if you're listening to this, then you just either like our idiocy or you're...
Which you can do, thank you.
Or you're trying to learn more about playing. And I think that's one thing, you know, maybe I've even said it before. If you have a new game master, you know, work together because it takes a while for everybody to get their groove. And it is fun. If you get to play with a seasoned game master, try to break their game because... a seasoned game master will enjoy the challenge. Yeah, don't be a jerk.
And
but...
in Savage Worlds, it is a game master.
Yay! yeah.
Which Which is a step up from the Dragon Master from Dragon Ball Z.
Actually, that would probably be a Ball Master.
I was going to say the same thing.
It could be.
Which sounds like an exercise machine that Sally Struthers would have plugged in the 90s.
The Keeper of Balls.
I lost 90 pounds with the Ball Master. Sorry.
I thought this was a family-friendly show again.
It was up until 10 seconds ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm completely disrespectful here. Anyway, any other systems real quick? Because we're past the hour mark here. Anything else that we should talk about before we hop off here?
No, I mean,
I think we've hit all the big ones.
Yeah, to kind of put a bow on it, I mean, no matter which system, basically find a system you like, right? And some of that's also going to be IP driven, right? If you want to play Star Trek, apparently you're going to be playing, or you're going to be introduced to the D20 or the 2D20 system. If you like Dungeons and Dragons, you're going to become more familiar with the single D20 system. If you like Star Wars, and you're not going to play one of the newer Star Wars because Genesis system is the newest one for Star Wars that they're using.
Yeah.
Fantasy Flight. You might want to check out the D6 system from West End Games.
Well, yeah.
You can still get them on DriveThruRPG.
Yeah. I was going to say, let's also preface this that if you're looking IP based and you look up Star Wars, what you're going to find is the Genesis system, because that's the current one being published. It's Fantasy Flight. It's the most popular. You'd kind of have to go searching for the West End Games version.
There's also a fan created D20 Star Wars system out there for really? The 5th edition.
Well, there was and that's another thing that I've seen here recently.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lot of people have been basically creating, they've been taking IPs and they've been like, "Hey, here's such and such. Here's Lord of the Rings for 5th edition. Here's Call of Cthulhu for 5th edition. Here's Star Wars for 5th edition.
Wizards of the Coast still has their limited open gaming license.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. I don't think it's as bad as the D20 era. But once again, that's a whole different episode that we're going to cover.
But the other thing, like, the difference between 3rd edition, where you're having your nightmare, Scott, is basically they literally just took the same exact system, same exact mechanics, same exact verbiage, and just put the skin over top of it.
Yep.
That's what they did in third. Like the 5th edition Star Wars, which is a fanfic created. I know you're talking about Lord of the Rings. Look, there's official Lord of the Rings published 5th edition stuff, but the fanfic, the fan created 5th edition Star Wars, they did put a lot more effort into it. So it's not just a reskin of a complete reskin of 5th edition.
Well, that's good.
Well, and I think this is the part where we like to hear from our listeners, and we'd love to hear what games you want to learn more about, the more in-depth introduction into a game, or what do you want to learn more about or hear more about?
Cyberpunk. You want to hear more about Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really good thing, Jamie. I thank you for bringing that up. But if our listeners did want to drop us a line, where could they do that at? Do you know?
I do know, because you told me, but I still can't remember. So you're going to have to do it. Oh, I got it. Hold on. I'm here.
You got
okay.
It?
You can do that by dropping us a line at houserulinggames@gmail.com.
All one word, all lowercase. Yes. Very nice.
Thank you.
Where else might they drop us a line?
Well, I don't know.
Well, we are on the Talk Nerdy to Me Facebook page.
There you go.
We are. Yes.
This is why Scott's in charge of marketing.
Talk Nerdy to Me Facebook page will always our podcasts are listed there. It's another way that you can communicate with us on some of our posts.
Yep, I'm in charge of marketing. Welcome to Ruling Houses. So anyway, so I think that's about it. Unless there's something else, I think we're good to go. Are we good to go here?
Good to go.
Good to go. So anyway, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like, as we just mentioned, please drop us a line at houserulinggames@gmail.com. You have been listening to House Rules, a proud member of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast network. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TN2MPodNet. And check out our other great podcasts. Until next time, remember, it's your house. It's your rules.